This episode of Chris Brown's True Stewardship is brought to you by Secure Give, the leading provider of safe and simple giving software for churches and charities that can be implemented through kiosks, online, mobile app, and text-to-give options. It's designed to grow your giving, save you time, and reach more people. Learn more at securegive.com. Ramsey Solutions presents Chris Brown's True Stewardship.
What if American households today got serious about stewardship? Not some old historic church word and not some fundraising campaign, but true biblical stewardship, managing God's blessings God's way for God's glory.
Welcome to Chris Brown's True Stewardship. Here's your host, Chris Brown.
Well, I'd like to welcome you to Chris Brown's True Stewardship. We're honored that you're tuning in today. I'm Chris Brown. I am your host. And hey, it's a great day to tune in because I'm kind of feeling like giving some best-selling resources away today. I mean, if you're into free stuff, right? We're going to be giving away tons of free stuff today. If you are new to the show, here's how the next 25 minutes are going to look. The Bible talks about in 2 Timothy 1:9, He has saved us and called us to a holy life, and not because of anything that we've done, but because of His own purpose and grace. But the question is, what does that holy life look like? You ever wondered that? Do you ever wonder if you're kind of walking in His holiness, if you're walking faithfully? Well, the Bible talks a lot about that all the way throughout the Scriptures, Old Testament and New Testament. And I guess if you were to put it in a nutshell, stewardship is everything that you do after you say yes to Jesus, you know, the walk. And so that's what we talk about. Your situations, you call in 866-357-3283. Again, 866-357-3283. And let me know about the situations that you're facing, the circumstances that you're in, and we'll kind of filter that through the Bible. You can also email in at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. This first phone call that's coming in is coming in from Sacramento. This is Donna. Donna, how you doing?
Hi, I'm good. Thank you.
Well, good. How can I serve you?
So my husband and I just finished up baby step 3. And we're moving into baby step 4, and we kind of have a stork on the way. So we're wondering, do we continue with stocking up, stockpiling money for expected baby, or do we move into baby step 4 and 5 and 6?
Okay, so congratulations. That's pretty cool.
Thanks.
Now, when is this little baby going to be born?
Expected delivery is January of next year.
All right, and this will be your second, third, fourth?
Second.
Okay, second child. How old's your other one?
Just turning 2 later this month.
Okay, very cool. And do you know yet if this one's going to be a boy or a girl?
Oh, we're really early.
Okay.
Not yet.
All right, gotcha. All right, so you're going into baby step 4. What do you think would change the baby steps? Why would you think that you would need to change because you got a baby coming in January? Just curious. Why would the game plan change?
Well, with maternity leave and just having like extra money in case something were to happen, my husband and I kind of discussed this back and forth. And I kind of want to split the difference and kind of work on 4 and 5 and then save everything that would go into 6. Mm-hmm. In case something were to happen, because I don't want to lose another year of, you know, being able to save for retirement and my son's college.
Yeah.
But my husband's thinking just save everything in case something were to happen, or in case I wanted to take more time off from work. We've got, you know, that extra fund, those extra funds.
What do you call baby step 3?
Your fully funded emergency fund.
A fully funded what?
Emergency fund.
An emergency fund. Guess what you've done? You've already done that.
Right. We only did 3 months.
Okay.
So that's kind of where.
Gotcha.
We're comfortable with that in terms of our employment situation. We both have stable jobs, but and we're not. Neither one of us are self-employed, where we'd want to have 6 months. So we kind of chose 3 months, but now we're thinking maybe we should have 6 months for this
Gotcha. And that's good. I like that. That's wisdom. Usually the difference between 3 and 6, what you're doing is you're doing a risk assessment. That's why there's a range there. If everything's mm-hmm. stable, meaning that your health is good and no babies on the way and no instability in the workplace, then 3 months is great. If you're all the way at 3, then I'm going to want to beef that up a little bit too over the next whatever 6 months it is. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'd want to beef that up a little bit too, but I think it's completely fine if you guys feel like you've got some good discretionary, room in your budget and you're not real tight, super tight, to kind of split it in the middle, maybe go four and a half months. There's nothing wrong with that at all, but I would beef it up a little bit more than 3 if I were you.
Okay. Perfect.
All right. And Donna, before you, kind of hang up with us, I just want to, you know, you've got your second one being born soon, and I'm feeling like I'm wanting to give some stuff away. So we have our Smart Money, Smart Kids book that I want to give to you as you kind of prepare yourself to teach your little ones about money. And so we're going to give you that book for free, and we appreciate you calling in.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Stay on the line, Donna.
We know that church leaders have big vision to impact lives, but usually don't have enough resources to make it happen. So if you can make it easier to create a culture of generosity in your church, wouldn't you do it? Secure Give is the leading provider of safe and simple giving software that can be implemented through kiosks, online, mobile app, and text-to-give options. It also has direct integration with the most popular church management systems, allowing automatic reconciliation. Nearly one-third of the top 100 churches in the U.S. use Secure Give. It's designed to grow your giving, save you time, and reach more people. Learn more at securegive.com.
All right, folks, well, you're listening to Chris Brown's True Stewardship, and I'm your host, Chris Brown. The phone number is 866-357-3283, and you can also email in at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. Got an email here from Marie. Says, hey, Chris, I appreciate your show. I have a question about compound interest. I don't understand the principle of compound interest with regards to mutual funds. I know that a mutual fund is a fund comprised of a group of stocks, and the stock's value goes up and down within the market. But how does a mutual fund earn compound interest? Thank you very much. Well, Marie, I would think of it as a team, like a ball team. You've got 80 to 200 stocks or something like that in a fund, right? Just like on a ball team, you'd have 40 to 60 players maybe on a football team, or maybe 15 to 20 players on a baseball team. Some players are going to have a good game. Some players are going to have a bad game. Some players are going to have a bad season. Some are going to have a good season. But the team overall, the big mutual fund, wins overall if more are doing well than doing bad, or if a few players, you know, really, or like a couple, like two or three players really play unbelievably and hit 4 home runs in one game or score 3 touchdowns in one game, and they can kind of pull the whole team up despite everyone else not playing very well. So that's kind of how it all works. It's going to be the accumulation of how well the entire team played. But I think it's a tremendous question. Never invest in things that you don't understand. And make sure that when you're talking to your ELP, your endorsed local provider, that they fully explain what you're about to invest in so you know exactly what you're doing. But this whole concept of all these stocks working together within a mutual fund reminds me of the church. 1 Corinthians 12:12 says, just as a body, the one has many parts, but all its many parts form one body. So it is with Christ. And it's kind of like that. We're all working together. We all play a role. Each one of those stocks within the mutual fund is either pulling weight or is an anchor and pulling everyone down. And we should think about that same concept too when we're in the workplace. We're either adding value or we're subtracting value. This next call comes in from Eugene, Oregon. This is Mark. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for giving me a chance to explain myself here.
Yeah, well, we're excited to talk with you. How can I help?
Well, we have 4 rental properties plus our primary residence, and we have income coming from those rental properties, as well as I'm a contractor, and my wife works part-time too, so we have these different income sources. Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure out whether or not we want to put money into mutual funds and stocks, or whether we should attempt to pay down our mortgages. What's a better use of our money? What's going to pay off faster? And ultimately, the security. And we looked at your baby steps, and we're ways down the list now.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say? Do we put money towards mortgages? Or should we snowball them? Or shall we put money in the market, and when the market matures, pull those funds out and pay the mortgages off? What would you say?
Now, when you say that you're discussing this and you're saying we, is one of you on one side and one of you on the other side?
No. In a lot of, I handle most of the banking just because I'm a little more wired that way. But my wife and I make these decisions together.
All right. Well, let me get some information from you. First of all, what's your income, and what portion of that income comes from the rental properties?
All right. We make about $185,000 a year with all of our different interests. The rentals bring in about $120,000 of that income.
Whoa. You make 140 something total, and 100 of that is from the rentals?
I'm sorry. We make 160 total. 120 of that is from the rentals.
Wow. The majority of your income is, they're not paid off?
They're not. No, we're about 10 years into a 30-year mortgage on them.
Wow. So what's the, just real quickly, as quick as you can, the value and the amount owed on each of these, including your primary?
Yeah, I don't have that exactly written out. They're worth about probably 2.5 combined.
Mm-hmm.
There's four properties, but there's six houses. Two of the lots have two houses on them.
Okay.
They're near the university, and we take excellent care of our rentals, so we get a good return on our rent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, your other question was?
Well, let me ask another question, too. Are you factoring in property taxes and maintenance and turnover and all that kind of stuff as far as your gains?
I am. Okay. That's just our profit on them, the 120.
All right. Now, let me ask you a question. Would you ever borrow against a paid-off primary to buy a rental?
Well, that's a great question. We have in the past borrowed money. Of course, before the market changed, you can borrow money back against your rental houses. And we did that. We would buy a house and then work on it. In the student rental market, of course, the more bedrooms you have to a degree, the more income you can make. And so we would fix the homes up. As a contractor, I could do it for, very little money, repair these homes, add second stories.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an arts and crafts home builder, so they're very nice looking houses.
Yeah.
And we would, once the income came up, then we would borrow against them and buy another one. And that's how we kind of leapfrogged to where we are now.
Yeah. So what's left to pay off the primary?
We owe $360 on our primary.
Okay. And what's your goal to pay that off?
Well, that's, again, our goal is to figure out whether we should snowball and begin to pay off the rentals first, or do we pay off our primary first?
I would definitely pay off the primary first.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely would do that.
To what degree should we do that? Obviously, you've heard our income. We don't live on that much money. We try to save a percentage of that, at least 20% would be available. 20% would be available to go towards the mortgage if we chose to. We live sort of frugally, and so we're able to be careful with the money. Would you put that towards the primary mortgage? At what rate would you pay down the primary?
I would do it if you're living frugally and you said sort of frugally, so that tells me there might be a little bit more room to squeeze a little bit more. I would pay it off as fast as possible. I would actually go as far as in looking to the property that's the least profitable. If there's one that's kind of that you've got some equity in and it's less profitable, I would actually even think through liquidating. I really don't like people in general to have rental properties before their primary is paid off.
It's
a little bit more difficult.
You've heard you say that before.
It's a little difficult situation in this because you got 80% of your income or 70% of your income coming from rental houses. So this is a very unique situation, but yeah, I'd get that primary paid off as soon as possible. I wouldn't want, to when it comes time to, let's say you were to graduate to heaven a month from now, I just wouldn't want someone having to take care of your primary mortgage. I'd want to, I'd leave a paid off primary first. That's kind of the way I'll do it. And the whole key thing is, I know you're comfortable, your lifestyle and your income. But don't forget Proverbs 6:5, free yourself like a gazelle from the hand of the hunter. That verse does not, you know, only, you know, apply to those who are poor or those who are struggling, or, I mean, it applies to everyone. So free yourself, however you can run away, you know, from this debt as fast as possible. That's what I'd recommend.
Can I ask you one more question?
Sure.
What do you see as an appropriate amount of money to have in savings before or during the time I go after paying down my primary?
Yeah, I just want you to have probably what I'm getting from your lifestyle. It's probably pretty stable. I would say 3 months in an emergency fund, and just keep that in there and don't move it. Don't touch it. It's just insurance. It's not an investment. It's not going to gain any interest for you, and it's going to frustrate you, especially as an investor. But that's just for you to be able to sleep at night and knowing that you have money in there.
Okay.
Yeah, 3 months in savings through this whole journey. And then I was thinking through what I want to give you, because I want to give some stuff away today. Are you familiar with the Legacy Journey book?
You know, I've heard of it. I don't have a copy, no.
Well, you're about to. So yeah. I'm going to give you the Legacy Journey written by Dave Ramsey, and you are going to be a very wealthy man. I want to make sure that you hear this. Is the Legacy Journey a biblical view at wealth? Is it okay to be wealthy? And then how the responsibility to handle wealth? And it's all in that one book. Tons of scripture in there, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So stay on the line, and you get a free copy.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Speaking of buying and selling homes, buying or selling a home is one of the biggest decisions you'll ever make in your life. If you've made one before, you know what I'm talking about. It's huge. It's a big, big decision. When making a decision this big, most people, they get help from a real estate broker. They get help from a real estate agent. But do you know where to find a top agent that you can trust to get the best deal on your home? And I'm going to tell you, it's our endorsed local providers. They are real estate agents with the heart of a teacher. They sell a minimum of 40 homes a year. You probably don't even know an agent that sells 40 homes a year. That's a big deal. I used to be a real estate broker. I'm telling you, 40 homes a year is bringing it. Our ELPs close 5 times more business than a typical real estate agent does in any one year. And on top of that, they put customer service before their commission, and you can tell the difference. So make sure you get connected with an endorsed real estate agent in your area by going to stewardship.com and clicking on Find an ELP.
Thank you for joining us on Chris Brown's True Stewardship. Remember, we want to hear your questions and your success stories. Every story, from your smallest milestone to your biggest victory. You can email Chris at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com with your questions or your success stories at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. That's chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. Or call us at 866-357-3283. That's 866-357-3283. Let's get back to Chris Brown's True Stewardship. Here's Chris.
Well, the phone number is 866-357-3283. You call in, and we'll talk about your stewardship questions. This next call comes in from Jackie. She's calling in from Florida. Jackie, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Where are you at in Florida?
Tampa.
Very cool.
Tampa area.
I went to college in Clearwater, right across Gulf to Bay Boulevard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So we're like neighbors. How can I help you?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I'm a born-again Christian, and I'm very blessed by God. He's given me a lot more than I'll ever deserve. I do have a house that's paid for and that I'm renting to a couple right now. They serve in my church. I was going to sell the house, but they were coming from out of state, and I just got this idea that I wanted to bless them and help them. So I rented them my house about $400 under market. And I feel that that was the right thing for me to do. But in the last 9 months, they've been late paying their rent like 7 times. And it's always at the end of the month, I always have this trepidation that, oh my gosh, they're going to be late, and then I got to talk to them about it. And I'm just really, I guess, disappointed in these people, and it's hard for me to not look at them with, I don't know.
Resentment.
I'm resentful, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, so it's how to handle the situation. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right.
Have you talked to them yet?
Oh, yeah, I've talked to them a number of times. I've actually did an addendum to our contract and told them they need to pay a late charge when they're late.
Yeah. What was the reason? What's their reason?
Well, that's another problem. I think what he's doing is he's betting on the come. He waits until the end of the month, and he always says, well, somebody didn't pay me. He's not being a good steward of his money. I can tell. You know, I used to be in credit and collections, and I basically heard it all. And I guess I'm assuming, but every month it's the same thing. You know, I didn't get paid when I was supposed to. And in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, shelter, food, clothing.
Yeah.
These things should be paid before you're off going. And they don't make any secret of going out and doing things. You know, his wife gets her nails done every 2 weeks. And I'm thinking, boy, when I couldn't have paid my rent, these are not the things that I was doing.
Yeah, here's the deal. Let me help you, because you're not only managing a tenant, you're also managing your heart. So this is
right.
There's two things going on here. So you want to make sure you take care of your heart. Resentful, angry, bitter, those are the things you don't want to feel.
Right.
You want to remember the grace that God's given you. So, but there is a principle here that you've got to teach him. If you've gone and talked to him directly, that's what the Bible tells us to do first. And from the angle of asking if he's okay, asking from an angle of how can I help you further, possibly, is there anything wrong? Just trying to find out the difference between financial problems and irresponsibility. It sounds to me like it's irresponsibility here. So I think the best way you can help him, and maybe you haven't looked at it this way, and folks listening in, this is truth right here. The best way that Jackie can help this tenant is to give him an eviction notice. That would actually help him. You do it with love. Obviously, you've clearly communicated. Maybe you even give him a grace period of another month. Hey, listen, the next time it happens, you give him one more warning if it makes you feel better. And maybe it's two more warnings. But this needs to stop soon for his benefit, not just for you. It's for his benefit. But I also think that you have a responsibility as a steward. You're managing this whole concept of generosity with the $400 discount, but also maximizing your investment. And so you've got this, you're playing between these two great concepts in the Bible. And I think when the generosity is not being received and it's actually not helping them, it's actually enabling them to be irresponsible.
Right.
Then you've got to go back to, am I being a good steward? So from a stewardship standpoint, I see you kind of being very kind about it, being very clear expectations. And I know you're in the same church, but people are going to say what they're going to say if they're going to say something. But you just know between you and God that you did the right thing. You did it with the right heart. You're very kind, that you've kept your mouth shut through the process, and that you've just showed the love of God through the whole thing. And sometimes the love of God is letting us go through some trials. And it might just be what he needs to, you know, to wake up. So you're doing all of this, you know, clearly communicating the expectations and to keep in Matthew 5:9 in mind, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. You're going to be a peacemaker through it, but you're still going to stand on principle. And I give him one more warning, and after that, he gets a 30-day notice.
All right. That was just a step further than I wanted to go, but I think you're right. I think he's...
In your head, you just have to know that this is for him. This is the same thing with employment. If you've got a bad employee, you owe it to them. You can't just continue to allow incompetence, because then they don't grow.
Right.
All of us have been let go from a job or something happened before in the past. Maybe we were 12 or maybe we were 18, but it made us better. And it takes somebody to be a truth teller. To be kind is to be clear. To be unkind is to be unclear.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you just lay it out there and you do it with love.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's given me a little bit more confidence, because I didn't want to do something like that with the feeling that I was just doing it out of resentment.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't do a thing until you get the resentment taken care of your heart, because it'll bleed through your actions and through your words.
Right.
I would have a lot of prayer time where the resentment's gone. It's just on principle. It's for him. It's for him, not for you.
Okay.
All righty. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Well, that's all we have time for today, but don't fret. We're here on the dial every day, Monday through Friday. And of course, available 24/7 on the podcast and at stewardship.com. Thank you again for telling your friends and family about the show and about the website found at stewardship.com. Remember to call us anytime. We try to get to all the calls, either on the air or off, so please let us try our best to serve you to the best of our ability. Well, folks, don't forget, visit stewardship.com. Get connected with an endorsed real estate agent in your area. Again, stewardship.com. Click Find an ELP. Folks, it has been a pleasure. And until next time, folks, let's continue to manage those daily decisions God's way and for God's glory. God bless you.